Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Welcome back. Áine Kerr here, sitting in for Brendan. Now, my next guest is a comedian. She managed to keep the country laughing through the various COVID lockdowns. She's a podcaster too, current co-host of The Lovely Show, and she's been very open and honest about her own personal struggles, something some listeners might wish to be mindful of for our conversation now. Justine Stafford, good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is a pleasure. You're going to talk about your life, but through five songs and just the various different meanings that they have for you. And you're going to bring me back to one, Joe Dolan. Now, you're a Meath native, picking a Westmeath man. So why Joe Dolan?
Joe Dolan was someone that was, there were four tapes in our car growing up, you know. So my mother's one was Joe Dolan, and you'd know who was winning the fight between my mother and father, between whose tape was being played. So it was Joe Dolan on her side.
On a loop, on a piece.
Like, all right, we'll be getting a takeaway tea tonight, I'd say. But it was Joe Dolan, and then my father's tapes, you would have the Dubliners, and there was the Beatles and Thin Lizzy. So a lot of like, a mix of music, but I think Joe Dolan was just someone that, they were just such catchy songs as well, and to hear that voice was just, it was gorgeous whenever you'd come into the car, and I've just such fond memories. And so like in later years I went back to go through his music and really appreciated just how powerful his voice was and his own story. And I mean, a couple of years in lockdown, I actually noticed there was a lack of like Joe Dolan merch and things online, and I always wanted to do something for him that just let people have access to more things about him. And there's a photographer, Connor Horgan. I found an image of his and I designed this t-shirt and sold it, but it was just for the Irish Hospice Foundation. I didn't want to make anything off of it. I just wanted to spread the good Joe Show love.
And as you went through the great Joe Show love, were you really conscious of how he had constantly reinvented himself, you know, with going back and re-recording some of like modern hits, but also the pride he had in his county and Mullingar and where he was
completely
from.
And I think that was, as someone from the country, seeing someone from a neighbouring area that was also very country, I just love seeing someone represent where they're from and be proud of where they're from, because it's something that I take very seriously in what I do, because I think there's sometimes a misconception of people from the country maybe not being as up to speed or in touch. And I find that something that I really love, having that ability to represent where I'm from, and I want to represent it well in what I do.
Do you think he paved the way for people from Westmeath and Meath?
I think it was really inspiring, absolutely. And it's so lovely to see now like artists like the Mary Wallopers, who are huge Joe fans as well, and there's this kind of rebirth of like the Irish show bands and Irish trad music and things. And it's so lovely to see that in the scene, that we're really coming back and appreciating his music. And that cover that I've chosen for this is one that I just think, honestly, better than the original, I would argue.
So tee us up a little bit on that first choice that you have, which is the Universal.
So this is a cover that Joe did with the RTE Concert Orchestra, and it was among a mix of different covers he did, and I just find it such a gorgeous version. And it's originally a Blur song, and now look it, I'd be Team Oasis. So okay, it's controversial,
fairly
I'm picking
that
it.
Too. That's okay.
You know, it's controversial, I'm picking it, but it's just such a gorgeous song, and it really showcases the power of his voice,
because yeah, the
I think
range.
It get, totally, as a kid, I think, I don't know, people wouldn't have, at my age, wouldn't have maybe been a Joe Dolan fan. And I think only now those people also look back and hear songs like this and realise just how incredible his voice was.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to that voice and the Universal by Joe Dolan.
This is the next century, where the Universal's free. You can find it anywhere. The future has been sold. Every night we're gone, and to karaoke songs, how we like to sing along.
Voice that could make a Wolverine purr.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? It's the range, it's the poignancy of it, and one could argue it's even better than the original.
I truly, and I know from showing it to people that wouldn't have been aware of that cover would also agree, and they just think it's such a gorgeous song.
So, staying with Meath, mm-hmm. And that part of the world, you grew up on a dairy farm in Nobber, but you chose a different career, not one of farming and cows, but a different sea, which was content creation. Talk to me about how you ended up. I think your first solo film was called A Day in the Life of a Shopping Trolley. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you got to that point.
Well, when we were in primary school, I went to Kilbeg National School, which was a very small rural school just outside the village of Nobber. And when we were in fifth class, there was this national film project that was introduced, and it was the first year of it, called Fish. And it was about introducing technology to schools. And I suppose this was like, we got sent a camcorder and we had to make a short film. And for us, this was the first time we'd ever...
What age are you at this stage?
I'm 10 at this stage, oh. Yeah. So, I mean, it's the first time we've seen a camcorder, really, you know. And we decided to make a short film for it. And we ended up winning the national competition. It was held in the Helix. And it was our primary school teacher, his brother's actually a DOP, Cahill Waters, and he had seen it and said, "Who shot this?" And the teacher told him
so
that
he was a producer.
He was, like a
director,
who would
producer,
do,
yeah.
director of photography. So he would have dealt predominantly like shooting things. So he asked who had shot it, and our teacher said, "I had." And he was like, "I think she has an eye for this." And that's entirely what inspired me then to get into film. And it's just incredible the power someone's impact can have on you as a child, a teacher, that, you know, you can have such a positive influence from a teacher growing up. And equally, if you hear stories of people who get a negative experience, that it was the thing that made them never continue to study a subject because some teacher told them that it wasn't. So it's just really at that core age as well, it was something that really was someone I looked up to, and I thought, if this person thinks I can do this kind of thing, maybe I should look into it.
It's a reminder of the one good adult we always need in our lives to kind of give you just that little nudge and a little bit of feedback.
And I do always wonder, what if that hadn't happened? Now, I do think I'd always have found some creative thing or found a way to be creative, but that was a thing that Christmas Santa got the letter, I was getting a camcorder, and from that point on I was just constantly I don't know how happy they were about it, but my family members were roped into starring in my own short films. And it was our primary school teacher that had told me there was a national youth film festival in Ireland called Fresh Film. It's held in Limerick every year for under 18s. And he said there was a submission deadline. So that was my goal, to create a short film. And that was the first one. Then I created The Day in Life of Shopping Trolley, which I submitted in to the festival.
Do you have a copy of it somewhere still?
I do. Yeah, it exists in the world. That's part
of the archive
technology
collection.
It's hard to get rid of things these days.
And so, going into your teenage years, there was a little bit of a gap, I think, between that first solo short film and the second. But filmmaking really became part of you figuring out your identity and who you were and what you wanted to stand for.
Definitely. And I think this was at a time, this wasn't when camera phones existed. It was harder to do film if you wanted to do it. You know, I had to invest in getting this equipment and this kind of thing. And it was kind of, in a way, something that at the time I was in a very rural secondary school, and GAA was kind of the heart of that. And to be doing something like film was a bit not the norm. And I kind of, alternative. And I found that kind of difficult to deal with as well. It was something I kind of did in secret that wasn't necessarily something that I would talk about in school. But it was the thing that always, I was, you know, coming home from school doing homework, and then I wanted to get back to editing the films and get this thing in for the submission.
And you were starting to go through your own struggles at this time as a teenager.
I think coming from primary school, it was such a sheltered small community. We were like a family. And going into secondary school, we all got separated. So I think every child of that age is just trying to fit in and find their friends. And I was very overweight as a child, and I think that was something that was easy for someone to pick on. And I don't hold any ill will against people in that class, because I know now, looking back, they were just like me. They were just trying to fit in and do the thing that would make them not be picked on and not stand out. And unfortunately, I was just someone that was. And I got into my head that the problem was my weight, that if I lost weight, people would like me. And that just became something that I became obsessed over, that from that summer in first year I went, and it was my only focus to lose weight. And unfortunately, it developed into an eating disorder, and I developed anorexia. And the thing with anorexia is, and any eating disorder, you think you're in control, but this thing is controlling you. And it's very hard to break out of that, because when people try to help you, you think they're trying to take this thing away from you, and this is the only thing that's being on your side in a way. And when someone has an eating disorder, I think the whole family suffers, and friends. It's not just that person. And it's very, only now I can look at families and people going through it. It can be very frustrating when this person you love is refusing help in the way I refused help.
It's not straightforward lines, is it?
It's not.
You know, progress doesn't move in straightforward lines. So I imagine there was lots of moments of setbacks and then other moments of progress and feeling like you were taking your control and power back.
I think it was because my weight had gotten so low, the only thing really to do was to try and get that weight up, as opposed to look into the reasons as to what caused me to stop eating. And I found that very difficult because, again, I felt like I wasn't being listened to, and why I developed this thing. And I understand now why that had to happen, but I found it very difficult. And returning to school that year, I was very underweight, and this moment that I'd expected of people to suddenly accept me was not what happened. It was just met with kind of looks of horror and people kind of afraid of me now. And this thing that I had spent the whole summer focusing on to achieve and just fit in and not be picked on anymore had just kind of amplified that, if anything.
So you had to find your way back to you, and it sounds like you had the editing and the filmmaking to kind of help with all of that and give that sense of purpose as you were figuring you out. And I wonder at that time as well, like when we think about media portrayals of women at that time to a young girl like you coming into the world trying to figure out your identity, there's a lot of confused messaging. And you look at people like Amy Winehouse now and Lady Gaga and others who've now started speaking more openly about it.
Well, I think at that time it was, the media was so against these people that you unfortunately were not shown the full picture, told their side of the story. And, you know, when Amy Winehouse came onto the scene, it's only now through looking back at her life, the struggle she had with eating disorders and things going on behind the scenes that people were never shown in the media because she was portrayed as someone who was had problems. And I think I maybe identified with her music at the time because she was a singer and a writer who wrote from the heart and spoke about her struggles and heartbreak and things that at that time, coming into my teens, was something my first experience of puppy love, that kind of thing. And it was just so emotional, and I really identified with that. And it's only now, unfortunately, she's no longer with us, but it's only through looking back at her body of work that I really see how the media handled everything so badly. And people like Lady Gaga as well, who when she came onto the scene was created as some kind of, you know, being outside of this world and different, and being different was not accepted.
And thankfully today, I think we see the CMATs and the chaperones and new young musicians like that, but asserting their narrative, how they want to tell the story of their body image.
Yeah.
But Amy Winehouse, who you talked about there, like such profound lyrics and songs. You picked one song for us today. Tell us a little bit about that.
I suppose the song is just kind of talking about heartbreak, and it's just the writing in it is so real to me and something that I can relate to. And I think, again, it's the power of her voice and her ability to put so much across in those lyrics and what she is singing about. And again, looking back at live performances of her, no performance was ever the same. And that, again, just shows she really put whatever emotion she was feeling in that moment into that performance. And I just really connected with that.
Okay, well, let's take a listen to Tears Dry on Their Own by Amy Winehouse.
So we are the shadow come, the sky above. Say no regrets and no most of no day, cause as we kiss goodbye the sun sets. So we are history, the shadow covers me, the sky above a blaze lonely lovers see. He walks away, the sun goes down.
The unmistakable voice of Amy Winehouse there. I'm talking to comedian and podcaster Justine Stafford, who's been taking us through some of her musical choices. So we're leaving the teenage years, coming into the college years, where I think in secondary school we all want to fit in, and you get to college and you kind of want to stand out.
I know.
It's different, isn't it?
I think that was this struggle for me again, because I think I'd spent so long in my teens trying to just fit in and focus on that, that I thought, I figured this out. And then you go to college and it's like, oh no.
Start again.
Wait a
reset.
Minute.
Yeah.
You know, and I did. I struggled with that also, because coming from the country, I went to DIT to study film and broadcasting, and it was predominantly people from Dublin. And I think, again, there was this like identity of I'm from a very rural part of Ireland and trying to represent that. And I kind of really did struggle with, do I fit in here? What am I doing at all?
And because of that, you were hedging your bets. You went to Pat's to try out teaching for a bit.
I did. I really have always struggled with making decisions. And my dear sweet mother kind of looked into it, trying to help me out, and noticed you could, there was a bit of a loophole that you could kind of not pay your fees up until the 31st of October, so you could reapply on CAO. And I ended up being in second year in film and broadcasting while also in first year primary school teaching in St. Pat's, going from one college to the other. So I'd be over in Pat's, they'd be like, you just did the leaving cert, did you? And I'm like, no, I just came from a lecture in DIT. And they're like, what is going on with your life? I'm like, yeah, I asked the question myself.
I'm trying to find myself yeah. is the answer. So teaching was not for you.
No.
You found your way into comedy and podcasting. And along the way, you know, obviously you're trying to figure out your identity. You're struggling with the mental health issues that you mentioned just now. Talk to me about what's going to be your third musical choice now from a Scottish band, Frightened Rabbit.
So Frightened Rabbit were a band that were so vocal again about in their lyrics, mental health struggles. And I think I really connected with that because I was going through, again, this kind of loss of identity and questioning, have I made the right decision? Is there going to be work? This was at a time when social media, the way we know it today, didn't exist. So the kind of career I'm in now was not even an option when I was in college. And I really struggled with, would I find permanent work? And, you know, my parents thinking, no, teaching's always there. It's a lovely
permanent pensionable job.
Do your videos in the summer. So it was definitely a struggle for me. And the more I went through college and then finished college, it kind of became, well, what's next? And I really did find my mental health going in a kind of downward spiral at that time. And the music of Frightened Rabbit was something that I really connected with, because they were so vocal about mental health struggles in a way that I kind of felt understood, that I didn't think I had been in a lot of lyrics before. This one really stood out to me as someone that really was experiencing very similar things to me. And the lead singer Scott Hutchinson was so open in interviews about having struggles and yet getting through them, and finding music as a way to get through that and talk about it. And so I really identified with that. And then unfortunately, when I was in my mid-20s, I had started interning at FM 104 radio station, and then I moved and was work I'd been doing online, making memes and stuff, got spotted by Joe.ie, an online media company. So I ended up getting an internship with them and started working there. And again, I was kind of doing well at the time. I mean, I'd had this internship hoping that it would turn to something full time, and still questioning a lot of, am I on the right career path? Is there something substantial here? And I did kind of go through a lot of mental health difficulties at that time, and there was a lot going on for me personally. But I then found out that the lead singer of Frightened Rabbit had taken his own life, and it kind of sent me kind of spiraling, because I thought this person that I had looked up to couldn't get through it any longer. And I thought, what does that say for me? Is the kind of thing that I'm going through, maybe there isn't a cure, maybe there isn't something to help me. And it kind of set me down a very negative kind of mind path. And I was looking for signs of anything to be a positive, you know, inspiration. And I couldn't find that. And it unfortunately led me to trying to take my own life at that time.
I'm so sorry to hear that and finding that dark place. And I know we're going to come to how you pulled yourself out of that dark place with a diagnosis that followed. Mm. But for a moment, let's take a listen to those lyrics, to that singer who you really empathised with and resonated with. Let's take a listen to Modern Leper by Frightened Rabbit.
You see, I've got this disease, I can't shake, and I'm just rattling through life.
Modern Leper by Frightened Rabbit, and I'm talking to comedian and podcaster Justine Stafford. And I'm sure it's hard to listen back to lyrics like that, you know, and talking about holding on. And you did hold on. Mm-hmm. The breakthrough for you was getting a diagnosis and bringing some clarity to your life. Talk to us about what happened.
Yeah, so it was at that time I had ended up in hospital, and it was there that I got given this diagnosis that I'd never heard of before. So it was borderline personality disorder, which is also referred to as emotionally unstable personality disorder. And it kind of described everything that I'd gone through. It's kind of an inability to kind of deal with emotions, extreme emotional highs and lows, and a dysregulation in that. And a lot of the symptoms that can be shown that you experience through it would be the likes of having experienced eating disorders, struggled with self-harm, body image, lacking a strong sense of identity. So all these things that I had gone through, if anything, getting that diagnosis was this relief that I thought there's actually something to describe what I'm going through. Because I always felt, have I got something that isn't curable? Because people at that time were taking medication if they had depression, and I tried that and it wasn't working for me. And finally it felt this relief of actually there's something to describe what I am going
it's
through.
Knowable. It's knowable. It's a known thing and probably shared with so many people globally.
Completely.
And even here in Ireland.
Yeah. And it was through that then that I found ways to try and find help and find what worked for me. The thing with taking antidepressants is that it's for predominantly chemical imbalances. And if someone is struggling with emotions, that's actually not going to possibly help. It may take you, and there's times I may have to take antidepressants to take myself out of a very low period and point. But once you get up from that, it's about finding a way to deal and manage emotions. So I know now I can identify things that may cause me additional stresses.
Triggers
and find ways to kind of stop my brain spiraling from that point, to intervene and have a logical thought process in that moment to kind of stop myself from spiraling out of that. And that's something that now through time since that, in my mid-20s, I've just found ways to deal with things. And there's obviously so many times where it is incredibly difficult, and it's finding a way to not let that spiral out and keep kind of on the right track and remember that there's various different things you can do to try and push past that.
Yeah, take back your power, take back your control, and find the right mix, as mm-hmm. you say, through medication, but also understanding your triggers. And when you reflect back on the teens and the 20-something years, what has it taught you? Has it taught you resilience? Has it taught you your pain threshold is really high, that you've great empathy now for people around you?
I think it's a combination maybe of those things. I think empathy definitely is something. I think from a young age, I've gone through, I suppose, a variety of different things that makes me more able to understand the complexities of others, and that, you know, something that you see may not always be the full story. And there's often, for all of us, I mean, for every single one of us, there's a story, and there's so much going on behind the scenes that people may not know about. And it's made me more kind of empathetic towards that and patient with people. And I think that's really benefited me in my work, in that I can really kind of portray things that are relatable to people, because I can create something that people can identify that feeling or that experience after going through something, even in a comedy lens, to be able to do that.
Because, you know, comedy, you're having to go out and I imagine just perform sometimes when your heart and your head mm-hmm. is elsewhere. And I always feel for comedians on stage like that, when maybe your energy doesn't match the content you have to talk about. And someone I know you're a big fan of is Bo Burnham. And I suspect mm-hmm. he's someone like that. But he's obviously learned the discipline of taking the timeouts, of going to ground when he needs to take control back.
Yeah, well, that's someone that it really has been so inspiring to me, just in every aspect between comedy and his own kind of struggles that I've really identified with. He's someone that started out on YouTube at age 13. And at that time, we're going back a good few years now, he was kind of one of those examples of someone who just had instant viral success. And at 18, he did his first kind of special that was just outstanding, but also in comedy, but also talking about the problems with this, of like someone who's catapulted to this level of success with kind of maybe ethically not the most best handled way to deal with a young performer. And is this really what's best for them? And he suffered an awful lot with anxiety and panic attacks, and it would cause him to have to take massive breaks between his sets and even doing shows and performances. And I think seeing him take those breaks and time away has been really inspiring to me, that it's possible that if you're going through a rough period, you have this sometimes this feeling, especially when you're self-employed, you don't have the option to just stop.
Yeah, you have to be all things to all people.
You have to, you know. And I think seeing people like that who are able to do that and still come back, and it's as if they were never gone, it is possible. And I mean, he took a break from stand-up to focus on doing a feature film then for a while, and I found that really inspiring, because I think there's more than just comedy of things that I want to explore in the future, and to see someone doing that, it's really...
Have you ever met him? He sounds like a hero to you.
I interviewed him for his feature film when he was in Ireland 8th grade, and it was the best moment and also worst moment, in the sense of, how do you not fangirl and become an absolute, like, just, yeah, it was amazing talking to him.
But you left with the always meet your heroes rather than the...
Absolutely, yeah. And he had spoken to the team afterwards and said I could have talked to her all day, and I was like, ah, oh, that's it, I've peaked, I'm out, good luck, go home.
Well, let's take a listen to the man that you were fangirling, Bo Burnham, and Can't Handle This.
The truth is, my biggest problem's you. I want to please you, but I want to stay true to myself. I want to give you the night out that you deserve, but I want to say what I think and not care what you think about it. A part of me loves you, part of me hates you, part of me needs you, part of me fears you, and I don't think that I can handle this right now. Handle this right now. I don't think that I can handle this right now. I don't think that I can handle this right. I don't think that I can handle this right. Look at them, they're just staring at me like, come and watch the skinny kid with a steadily declining mental health. And laugh as he attempts to give you what he cannot give himself.
I don't think that I can handle this right. I don't think that I can handle this right. But they don't even know the heaviness.
That was the fourth musical choice of Justine Stafford, and that was Bo Burnham with Can't Handle This. Take us up to present day. People will know you from your local Alfala. Great. I'm from Monaghan. Everyone knows this guy that you impersonate there. You've done the very funny bikini waxing videos that I think has left us all traumatised. So what do you do now? What's the focus?
Yeah, I mean, it's finding the balance of all these things. It was really incredible to create that Owlfella character, because I didn't realise just how many people have experienced him. And that was both, I think, good to know and also, like, worrying to know. But it is just one of those identifiable characters, and it's been really lovely to create something that so many people have complimented me on, or that I've met, that really it got them through kind of even funerals and times that they've described, you know, that character at the funeral. We just had to have a laugh about it at a time. And I'm like, well, that's good to know. It's really hit a chord with a lot of people. But yeah, I'm working, obviously doing the podcast at the minute, and working, writing on a series at the minute, and trying to just find a balance between various projects. And I do have plans in the new year, if not sooner, to more so a passion project than anything, than to go back to short film, the thing I started out in. And there's a short film I want to kind of create, which is about kind of this perceived idea of success and the stresses we put on ourselves and the sacrifices we make. Because I know in finding balance in my life, it's been difficult to kind of take focus off of the career and remember what's more important, which is your friends and family and where you're from. And going home to me is so important to me, even just to go home to the fields and scream for a weekend. I find that very therapeutic. I love doing that.
Screaming
into the void. You love to see it, you love to hear it. And I think it's finding that balance of, and that's something that I want to create in this short film, to show this idea of success is oftentimes not that. It's sacrificing what's actually really important in life, and it's finding that balance between the two. So that's...
Well, good for you. It sounds like you're finding the balance, and we've had lovely text messages coming in about you for being so generous and insightful and wise with all your learnings. One person says, Justine is brilliant. I have a young person in my life who I think will benefit from listening to her. Lovely interview. Looking forward to seeing what Justine does in the future. Beautiful interview with Justine, says another. It's what I needed today. And that's from a gentleman in Westport. Thank you so much for today. Justine Stafford, we wish you all the best of luck with the good show and with everything that, or the lovely show.
The lovely show.
Yeah. And all that is to come with that. And we're going to play you out now with your fifth and final track, which is Motion Sickness by Phoebe Bridgers. Thank you so much, Justine.
Thank you for having me.